Purgam rasa yamaha sukaro.
Tvam puragam rasa yamaha sukaro.
Dhamstraya padminim varanendro yata. Dhamstraya padminim varindro yata. Stuyamano nadalilaya yogibir. Stuyamano nadalilaya yogibir. Vyujjaharta twayi gatra yagya kratu. Vyujjaharta twayi gatra yagya kratu. Tvam,
you,
pura,
in the past,
agam,
the earth,
rasaya,
from within the water,
mahasukara,
the great boar incarnation,
dhamstraya,
with your tusk.
Padminim,
a locus.
Varana Indra,
elephant.
Vita,
as.
Stuyamana,
being offered prayers.
Nandan,
vibrating.
Nilaya,
very easily.
Yogibi,
by great sages like Sanaka.
Vyujjaharta,
picked up.
Trayigatra,
O
personified Vedic knowledge.
Yagyakratu,
having the form of sacrifice. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Dear Lord, O personified Vedic knowledge, in the past millennium, long, long ago, when you appeared as the great boar incarnation, you picked up the world from the water, as an elephant picks up a lotus flower from a lake. When you vibrated transcendental sound in that gigantic form of a boar, the sound was accepted as a sacrificial hymn, and great sages like Sanaka meditated upon it and offered prayers to your glorification. Translation responsibly. Dear Lord.
Dear Lord.
O personified Vedic knowledge.
O personified Vedic knowledge.
In the past millennium.
In the past millennium.
Long, long ago.
Long, long ago.
When you appeared as the great boar incarnation.
When you appeared as the great boar incarnation.
You picked up the world from the water.
You picked up the world from the water.
As an elephant picks up a lotus flower.
As an elephant picks up a lotus flower.
From a lake.
From a lake.
When you vibrated transcendental sound.
When you vibrated transcendental sound.
In that gigantic form of a boar.
In the gigantic form of a boar.
The sound was accepted.
The sound was accepted.
As a sacrificial hymn.
As a sacrificial hymn.
And great sages like Sanaka.
The great sages like Sanaka
meditated upon it. And offered prayers for your glorification. Purport. A significant word used in this verse is Trayigatra, which means that the transcendental form of the Lord is the Vedas. Anyone who engages in the worship of the deity or the form of the Lord in the temple is understood to be studying all the Vedas 24 hours a day. Simply by decorating the deities of the Lord, Radha and Krishna in the temple, one very minutely studies the injunctions of the Vedas. Even a neophyte A devotee who simply engages in the worship of the deity is understood to be in direct touch with the purport of Vedic knowledge. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaish Chasabhara Aham Eva Vedya. The purport of the Vedas is to understand Him, Krishna. One who worships and serves Krishna directly has understood the truths of the Vedas. Omegyan Timedandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmanitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, which canto is this? Very good. And what is the first pastime of the fourth canto? What is that? What is the first pastime in canto four? Yeah, the Daksha Jagya. Now this is it. This is the first pastime. So how many chapters did it go for? Seven. Right? So it's seven chapters long, which is quite significant. There's not so many pastimes in the Bhagavatam which go for seven chapters. The tenth canto goes obviously for 90 chapters. So that's significant that Krishna continues. Because the Bhagavatam is actually about Krishna. That is the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam. Etecham sakalapam sa Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. So, because the Bhagavatam is actually just about Krishna. So everything we hear about in the Bhagavatam is simply supporting that verse from the first canto, third chapter, 28th verse. Everything is supporting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So whenever we're hearing anything else, like in the third canto, we're hearing about the appearance of Lord Baal, or the second canto, we're hearing about creation involving Lord Brahma, Saga or Visaga, any of their subject matters. Everything is relating to Krishna, because it's saying Krishna is the source of that Lord Baal. Krishna is the source of Brahma. Krishna is the source of Mahavishnu. So everything is related to Him. So this particular chapter gives a important pastime, the Daksha Jagya. It's when there are two main personalities, or actually three main personalities in this pastime. But there is Lord Shiva and there is Daksha. Now Daksha offends Lord Shiva, and it takes seven chapters to tell this story. So this shows that this is a significant lesson. And this is a reoccurring theme in the Bhagavatam. As you study the Bhagavatam systematically, there's 18,000 verses. So systematically we study. Prabhupada says in the introduction of the Bhagavatam, the very first, before the Bhagavatam even begins, in the introduction, Prabhupada says, the Bhagavatam must be studied systematically, categorically. Of course, you can read it, you can read any book anytime. Prabhupada gives the example of an apple. So you pick up an apple, you can bite the apple on any side, and it tastes sweet. Right? But at some point in time, you have to study the Bhagavatam systematically also. Canto 1 to Canto 12. It must be, because there is a theme. It's thematic. And as you go through, certain things are taught to us. And there are reoccurring themes. Just like when you're teaching, you have to bring up the same point again and again and again. This was 7 days, 7 nights. So as during those 7 days, then certain themes have to be mentioned again and again, and the important ones get mentioned in every canto. And when they're very important, a lot of time is spent on them to make them really, make us understand them very carefully. So what is the main lesson that we learn from the Daksha Yajna? Vaishnava Bharat. Or if we elaborate on that, do not commit Vaishnava Bharat. It's good not to offend devotees. Why is it good not to offend devotees?
They carry Krishna with
them. Very good. They carry Krishna with them? Yeah. Why is it good not to offend devotees?
We'll make good progress on our spiritual path without any barriers.
Yeah, very good. Because it makes your spiritual advancement easy. Now, if you offend devotees, you will never attain Krishna. Right? This pastime is further in the Bhagavad. There's another famous Vaishnava Aparad scenario or pastime, which just happens a little bit later on in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone know?
Ambarish Maharaj and
Devasa Muni. And Ambarish Maharaj. Also a very famous one. See, it goes again and again in the Bhagavad Gita. Over 7 days, he mentions these points again and again and again. Do not, Pariksha Maharaj, please do not offend devotees. Right? On the first day or the second day, and then on the third or fourth day, Pariksha Maharaj, please be very careful about offending the devotees. Because the Bhagavatam was not just spoken for Pariksha, it was spoken for us. 5,000 years later, 2018, February the, whatever day it is, 197 Dank Street, Albert Park, devotees were sitting here, and Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Pariksha knew that we would be sitting here, and we would be listening. And we have to be reminded again and again and again, don't offend devotees. Because if you do, it will be difficult for you to advance in Krishna consciousness. Krishna will withdraw his mercy. That's natural. Just like in any relationship. Right? If you offend a member of my family or a close friend of mine, I will also feel offended. Maybe even more than if you directly offend me. I will feel upset. So how does Krishna feel? You offend one of his devotees, how does he feel? Oh, that's not very good. Actually, he's angrier than if you offended him himself. Right? Just like last week was the appearance of Nityananda Prabhu. Right? One of the most famous pastimes involving Gaur Nithai is that if you offend Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya becomes most upset. Actually, there are statements which say, if you accept Lord Chaitanya but you don't accept Lord Nityananda, then Lord Chaitanya does not accept you. So take it a step further. If you accept Krishna but you don't accept Krishna's devotees, Krishna doesn't accept you. You accept the Guru but you don't accept the Guru's followers, the Guru does not accept you. One time one devotee, he came to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I can work with you, but I can't work with them. Meaning Prabhupada's representatives. No. And Prabhupada said, love me, love my dog. In other words, if you're going to accept Prabhupada, you have to accept Prabhupada's representatives. That's Prabhupada's system. Right? The temple presidents, the GBCs, the gurus, any senior Vaishnava, they're representing Prabhupada. So you can say, well, I accept Prabhupada, but I don't accept them. Then, no, that doesn't work. That's why we reject the Ritvik philosophy. You all know what the Ritvik philosophy is? You all know? Okay, so I don't have to explain what it is. That's why we reject it. I followed Prabhupada, but I won't follow his followers. That wasn't Prabhupada's instruction. Therefore, you know, we reject that. We can't accept that kind of philosophy. So you must accept. So Krishna does not become happy, right? If you offend the devotees, but you worship Krishna, your worship is not accepted by Krishna. That's the point. So we have to be careful about offending the devotees. So this pastime is explaining that. It's the primary lesson within this pastime. Now, when you chant the holy name of Krishna, hands up if you chant the holy name of Krishna. Chanting or not chanting? Okay. If you don't put your hand up, then we have to check. If you're chanting the holy name of Krishna, then there are 10 offenses to be avoided in the chanting of the holy name. Does anyone know the 10 offenses? We say them every day, so we should know. So what is the first offense? What is the first offense, number one? And in Sanskrit, what do we call that? Very good. Sadhu Ninda. Sadhu Ninda. So now define a sadhu. Who is a sadhu? Sadhu means saintly personality. One time. Yeah.
One was chanting Hare Krishna.
What's that?
Definition of a sadhu.
One who was chanting Hare Krishna. Yeah, it's one definition. One definition, yeah. So, sadhu, saintly personality. Who is a saintly person? 1968. How old was Iskcon in 1968? Okay, 3 years old. All right, just started. How many devotees were there in 1968? 80 devotees. Right? So there's one devotee. His name was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Yeah? But he was not Tamal Krishna Maharaj at that point. He was just Tamal Krishna. So he was going for a walk with Srila Prabhupada. And then he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, how many pure devotees are there on the planet? And Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? So it means everyone is a pure devotee. Prabhupada said, the mango is ripe or the mango is unripe. So if the mango is ripe, we say it's a pure devotee. If the mango is unripe, we say that is aspiring devotee. Vaishnava Bas, which means we're devotees, but we're not actually devotees yet. But we're becoming devotees. We're learning, we're becoming purified once again. But we must accept anyone who is on the path of bhakti, they must be respected as a devotee. So we have to give them respect. So if you offend them, so sadhu ninda means to offend the saintly person. Now what happens if you look, there's 10 offences in chanting the holy name. Two of the offences, the first one and the third one. The first one is to blaspheme the devotees. What is number three? Disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Those two are directly connected. The other eight can be overcome by cultivation of knowledge. To consider the names of demigods, like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Just by proper knowledge. It means if you think like that, you haven't overcome you have improper knowledge. To consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna as imagination, that means you don't have proper knowledge. So just by cultivating knowledge, those eight can be overcome. But number one and number three, if you commit those offences, you have to directly go to the person who you have offended and beg forgiveness. That is the only way. And this is shown in the pastime of Ambarish Maharaj and Devasamuni. Devasamuni offended Ambarish. And then what happened? He went to Narayan, God himself. He said, please forgive me, protect me. He said, I can't do anything. Even Krishna, if you offend a devotee, even Krishna can't help you. Krishna can give you good advice. Right? He can say, go back to that person and beg forgiveness from him. And that's what he did. He said to Devasa, I can't help you, Ambarish can. So he went back to Ambarish, he said, please forgive me. He said, okay, no problem. No big deal. It wasn't a big deal in the first place. And I see this whenever there's friction between two devotees, it's not usually a very big deal. I mean, occasionally it is. But usually it's just someone's false ego just getting hurt, right? And then, you know, the whole thing slams out of, you know, out of proportion, you know. And then, you know, curses and counter curses, you know, like you see in this pastime, cursing, we curse you, all you brahmanas. And then the pastime, all the Lord Shiva followers, we curse you. And then his curse is flying around. And what was Lord Shiva doing? Right? He was in trance. And then he woke up and he looked around and he saw everyone like throwing curses. And what did he do? He said, I don't want to be a part of this. And he just left. He walked out. He didn't throw any curses. Huh? So when we become a little bit intelligent, we don't throw curses. We just become very humble. Like as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, like a korma, like a tortoise, and we just go within ourselves and then we just leave the situation. But cursing and counter-cursing, that's not correct. One time I was having one devotee, more senior than me, like one of the senior devotees, he came to me and he said some very heavy words to me, which I didn't think actually was fair. So like, said like that. So I was hurt. So I went upstairs to Prabhupada's house. Burujan Guru was up there, my Shiksha Guru. Walked into his room, I started crying. Right? Anyone knows me, I don't cry very easily. So I was except when I get married and stuff like that. But I don't cry easily, right? But I was really upset. Really hurt me. So I went up and I walked in, I started crying, I sat on the ground, and he came and sat on the ground with me, and then we're talking. And he said, what happened? So I said, oh, he said that. He said, what did you say? I said, I said that. Like that. And then I looked at him and I said, so what do you think? He said, I just see two false egos bouncing off each other. That's all. You have false ego, he has false ego, both, and then all this problem. Like this, not like that. So this is our situation. We get caught up in things which are actually most of the time not that significant. But because we're very absorbed in the bodily concept of life, the false ego, then we take great offense. We take offense very easily, actually. So, sadhu ninda, right? If you offend sadhus, because the first offense and the third offense are directly connected. So if you offend sadhus, what takes place? Krishna's mercy withdraws. And when it withdraws, then you become implicated in the third offense, which is to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. When you lose Krishna's mercy, it becomes difficult to follow the instructions of the guru. So there is a connection. You offend devotees, Krishna's mercy withdraws. It'll be hard for you to follow the regulative principles and to maintain your Krishna consciousness. Or, if you look at it the other way, if you stop following, if you disobey the orders of the spiritual master, if you don't follow the guru's instructions, if you don't follow the regulative principles as the guru has instructed you, then, usually out of guilt and out of your inadequacies and your lack of purification, you begin to criticize the devotees. You see it. It happens all the time. People start criticizing devotees. Oh, he's like that, he's like that. It's basically because you cannot follow and you're looking for some justification because you cannot follow the path of Krishna consciousness. That's the point. If you can't follow, no problem. There's no pressure. I mean, a lot of the time we do put pressure on devotees, which is not a good thing. You know, sometimes someone can't follow, we ostracize them. He's fallen. We're also fallen. But if someone can't follow, that's not a problem. We encourage them. Okay, keep going, keep trying. Actually, in the congregational ministry, Jayavataka Swami is the head of the congregation minister in ISKCON. There are different levels. Quite often we preach in ISKCON, you have to chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulative principles. But actually, Maharaj's congregation ministry, he has different levels of commitment. 1 round, 2 rounds, 4 rounds, 8 rounds. 8 rounds, 3 regulative principles. Because many people find it hard to give up illicit sex. sex life outside of just trying for children. So Maharaj is so merciful. He says, no problem. Right? At least follow three principles strictly. Right? And chant 8 rounds a day. Is that good or not good? Right? But most of the time in ISKCON, if someone's not you can't follow all the principles. That's difficult in Kali Yuga. You can't chant 16 rounds? No, it's difficult in Kali Yuga. So we have to gradually bring people up. But if you stop, if you disobey the orders of the guru, you will offend the devotees. And if you offend the devotees, you'll stop following the orders of the spiritual master. So they're one and three are directly connected. And the only way that you can overcome this offense, if you offend the guru, you have to go to the guru and you have to beg forgiveness. If you offend the devotee, you have to go to the devotee and beg forgiveness. That's the only way to destroy that offense. There isn't any other way. In Madhurya Kanambini it says, if the devotee doesn't forgive you, which means they must be really upset, it says, then you can constantly take shelter of the holy name and the holy name will forgive you over time. But that means there must be a very big offense if that happens. So generally, this is the way to overcome this offense. Now, the subject matter here is Vaishnava Aparad, offending devotees. In the Skanda Purana, it is said there are 6 types of offences you can commit against devotees. Right? From less severe to most severe. Okay. So the least severe is if you see a devotee and you're not happy when you see them, and they feel a little bit hurt, that's Vaishnava Aparad. Just you're not even happy when you see a devotee. That's Vaishnava. Sometimes we do that. I do that sometimes. Some devotee comes, I don't smile. And then they think, is there something wrong? Prabhu, it's just me. I'm tired. I'm having a hard day or too much service. I joined ISKCON. I should have become a Buddhist or something. It's more peaceful. I actually joined this movement to become peaceful. That's why I joined. Yeah, and I haven't been peaceful since I joined. If you want peace, Buddhist ashram down the road. So. If you want the battlefield, Hare Krishna. Yes. We live on the battlefield. It's a fight. Prabhupada says, when you join ISKCON, you declare war on Maya. That's a war, it's a battlefield. That's why we look tired, because we're fighting all the time in the battle. So we have to be conscious of this. We have to be conscious. Sometimes devotees, they get hurt because we don't receive them nice, we don't smile. That's an offense. Right? Or if you don't feel good towards a devotee, and you see them, and then you don't smile because something is there, that's an offense. Right? And sometimes devotees do this. They find it difficult to communicate, to go and say, if we do feel, sometimes we do feel hurt. Sometimes a devotee does something and it hurts us. So then we should, because Rupa Goswami says there are 6 loving exchanges. Dadati, pratigrinati, means I reveal my mind in confidence and I inquire confidentially. So Prabhupada said ISKCON is based on love and trust. Right? Very important. It's almost like our, we probably don't use it enough or we don't understand it enough. It's almost like our motto, one of our mottos. ISKCON is based on love and trust. Now, Prabhupada would say this all the time in his early letters. Right? He says it dozens of times. Love and trust between the devotees. If the relationships get to that point, we should be able to go to each other and say, Prabhu, you did do something that it did hurt me, what you did. You said that or you did that, it did hurt me. Instead of festering and carrying it for a period of time and then, holding that within ourselves, just go to them and say, this actually did hurt. And if we are actually close with each other, like family, We say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I hurt you, I didn't realize I said that, I didn't realize what I did actually caused you distress, forgive me. Right? And then you just embrace each other and then it's all forgotten. Offer obeisance, it's all done. But sometimes, you know, because one devotee took the last piece of avocado at breakfast. In 1996, on February the 4th, right? I remember one devotee took the last piece of avocado. I've never forgiven that devotee. Until the day I die, I will keep that in my heart. Sometimes we do like that. For years. Sometimes devotees don't even talk for years. And after years they say, what actually happened? Why did we stop talking? You took the avocado. Oh, Prabhu, I didn't know you wanted the avocado. Half the time that's what it is. Material world key. That's what it's like in the material. In the spiritual world, this never happens. You know, because everyone's in a different state of consciousness. Down here we get very strange and then we get offended and all these things. So this is the first level. Second level is becoming angry at a devotee. Right? That's higher. That's more serious. You actually become angry. You verbally say something or you physically do something or show anger towards another devotee. It's an offense. You see the whole Daksha Jagya. Everything just blew up. Everyone became angry. Anger is energy. Describes in the Bhagavad Gita how it's created, how anger is created. Right? Anger is an energy that when you feed it, it becomes stronger. Right? And that's why you see, when we become angry and then someone reacts with anger, right? It's like putting the ghee on the fire. It just grows. Right? That's why Rupa Goswami says, six things you have to control. Right? What is one of the things? Krodha, vegan. You have to learn to control krodha. Anger. Right? When you feel it coming, you have to control it. Because right? Otherwise it consumes you. Right? Which Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? You meditate on the objects of senses, you become frustrated, anger arises, and then it consumes the consciousness. So when you become angry at a devotee, right, it's an offense. So we have to learn to analyze what is the source of the anger. If we become angry all the time, find out what the source is and deal with the source. Because it's an offense. So we have to be careful of that. Right? Third level, right? First you don't smile to the devotee, then you become angry. Being envious or hating the devotee, right? You actually become continuously envious of a particular devotee or hating that devotee. Which means when they're not there, you speak about them all the time and you say negative things or you're thinking negative things or you even do negative things. That's a more serious level of offense. Right? Continuously being envious of them. One very good principle, right, to practice in our lives, right, and if we can learn to do it, you only say something about someone if they're present. Most of us don't do that. You know, we talk about people when they're not there. When we criticize them when they're not there. But if we can learn to do this principle in our lives, which is not an easy thing to do, but if you can learn to do it, I'll only say something to the person if they're actually there, our lives will become so much more simpler. Okay? But sometimes we do like that. We don't like a devotee, and then we always, when they're not around, we always, oh, they're like that, they're like that. Right? And we destroy our devotional consciousness. More serious is I actually jumped ahead, so I have to track back. It says not to glorify a devotee. This is before you become envious. Not to glorify. It means when there's an opportunity to say something, to recognize something that a devotee has done and not doing that out of envy, then that's an offense also. It actually says in the Shastra, one should not fail to glorify the spiritual master. Right? It's an item of bhakti. When you're present with the guru or senior devotee, anyone who's your inspiration, you must glorify, you must offer praise. Right? Not to do that in an appropriate time and place, that's an offense. More serious is to, as we said, envy them like that. Even more serious is to blaspheme the devotee. Right? This is the fifth level. It's very serious. Criticize them publicly. Does anyone here go on the internet? Just type in Hare Krishna on the internet. Type in Hare Krishna and see what comes up. You know, the first page, like on Google search, you type in Hare Krishna. Half of it is all negative things. Oh, Hare Krishna is this, Hare negative, ISKCON is this, this person did this, this devotee did that. And then if you start scrolling down, it's actually hard for people to come to the Hare Krishna movement through the internet. You just type in Hare Krishna, 50% of them is just all this negativity. Not that. It's blasphemy of devotees, not necessary. Some devotees, that's their whole life. They run websites just to bring everyone else down. And they have some misconception they're coming closer to Krishna. And Krishna's going to say, when they die, Krishna's going to say, oh, no problem, just come back to the spiritual world. Right? You just spread blasphemy of every devotee on the planet all over the internet, but that's okay. That was your service. Come back to the spiritual world. Right? They'll never go back to the spiritual world, ever, ever, for thousands of lifetimes. One of Prabhupada's disciples once said to Prabhupada, he was actually one of Prabhupada's personal servants, he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, please bless me that I'll find a real guru. Imagine saying that. Right? And Prabhupada said, I bless you, you will find a real guru in 36,000 lifetimes. That was Prabhupada's blessing. And that person is still practicing Krishna consciousness. He's a professor in a university in America. Writes papers about Krishna and all of these things, and you know, quite a well-known professor, and you know, still practicing a devotee. But he has a curse hanging over his head. 36,000 lifetimes. And he probably isn't taking that seriously. So that's up to him. That's between him and Krishna. But I would be very scared if I had that curse hanging over my head. And the first thing I would do, I would go to Prabhupada, I would put my head on his feet, and say, Prabhupada, forgive me. And Prabhupada would say, okay, you fool, I forgive you. Like that. And then that's the only way to nullify the offense. And then the highest offense is to kill a devotee. Right, that's the worst. And I don't imagine anyone sitting in this room will ever do that. If you do, let us know and we'll kill you first to save you, because if you do that, you're finished. You're finished. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes devotees, they get killed. Sometimes people kill devotees, but the reaction to that is unthinkable. Unthinkable how serious that offense is. So I don't imagine any of us will ever do that. Please don't kill anyone. Even if they burn the kichuru. Even if they take the last avocado, I don't care. I know it's tough, but don't kill the devotees, please. Hare Krishna. So this pastime is very serious. That's why it keeps getting mentioned again and again and again. It's one of the topical themes. Even in the 10th canto, which we're studying now in our discussions in our Bhaktivedanta course, it comes up again and again in the 10th canto. Don't offend devotees. No. What does Krishna do with the offenders in his pastimes? Chakra. Krishna says, chakra. And then Sudarshan manifests. You know Shishupal? Mm-hmm. How many chances did Krishna give him?
100.
100. Right? Krishna had, you know, like when we chant japa, we have the counting beats. Krishna had 100 counting beats. Right? Krishna was there in the Rajasuri sacrifice and Krishna was just going. He said, Krishna said, I'll give him 100 chances. And the guy wouldn't stop in front of everyone, thousands of people. Demigods were there. Lord Vishnu was there. And he was just blaspheming Krishna. Krishna just went like that. And after 100 times he said, What can I do? I can't do anything now. Chakra. Chakra came. Right? Like that. Chakra took off his head. Right? And then his soul, Atma, merged into the Brahma Jyoti. While that was going on, Bhima, who was Krishna's dear cousin, was sitting there. And when he heard Krishna being blasphemed, he tried to get up off his throne to go and kill Shishupal, take his club. He was going to come and smash him. And you know who was sitting next to him? Bhishma, grandfather Bhishma. And with one hand, right, because he was sitting like this on his throne, with one hand, grandfather Bhishma had his hand on Bhima's, and Bhima was as strong as 80,000 elephants. And with one hand, Bhishma just held him there. He couldn't get up. He was trying to get up, and Bhishma was just there. And Bhishma said, just wait. He said, Krishna will take care of him. And Bhima said, just let me kill him. Right? And he said, Bhishma said, just wait. Right? And then after 100, Krishna said, okay. So that's how Krishna kills. If you offend, if you're an offender, that's how Krishna deals. Same thing. You offend Krishna's devotees, chakra. No? You look up there, you have lotus, club, chakra, and conch. Right? Conch, lotus, that's for the devotees. Chakra, club, right? That's for the part of us that is not a devotee. Right? Because the devotee and demon live in the same body. So if you're a good boy or a good girl, Krishna gives lotus flower. Hare Krishna. And if you're not, then Krishna says, chakra, or club, gadda. Like that. That's out. Krishna's very nice. Krishna's very pleasant. He's very sweet. Soft as a rose or hard as a thunderbolt. That's our choice. Yeah. You can do things the easy way or the hard way. That's our choice. You want to do it the easy way? Krishna is sweet. The Hare Krishna movement is sweet. Everything is ecstatic. Or you want to do it the hard way? The Hare Krishna movement becomes a different thing. Right? It becomes purification. So it's up to us. Okay. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir. What's the question?
How do you distinguish senior devotee?
Senior devotee?
Yeah. Correct devotee.
As compared to what?
As compared to getting angry at or criticizing.
Whether, if a senior devotee chastises us, whether it is just or unjust, how do we differentiate? Is that the question? Yes, that's what I say. It's whether it's just or unjust. That's the question, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So if a senior devotee chastises us, how do we differentiate if it's just or unjust? That's the question, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. From our side, we should, whenever we're criticized, we should always look for the truth within that. Because any criticism will have some grain of truth. It could be 100% true, or it could be 5% true. But first of all, you have to look. There must be some truth in it. So if any devotee, sin devotee chastises us, then we think like that. If, most of the time it will be correct. Because if a devotee is a senior devotee, that means they're qualified to be a senior devotee. They're Krishna's representative. So generally, their instructions, their criticism, it will be constructive. It's meant for your benefit, right? And it should be taken humbly. Sometimes, you know, because we're not blind followers, we have to question things. But we have to, if we feel it is unjust, then you take it to a third party. You take it to another senior devotee and say, Prabhu, this devotee said this to me, right? And I don't think it's completely just. What do you think? And they say, no, they're right. Then you say, okay. Then it's your false ego. But if the other devotee says, no, I think you have some legitimate concern, then that can be discussed and worked out. But the point is, when we give, if we're the senior devotee, because we're all senior devotees to someone, if we are the senior devotee, it's the way we deliver the criticism. That's what's important. What's our motivation? It must be constructive. It must be for the benefit. It must be coming from the right place. That's the point. And it must be for their benefit. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, speech must be pleasing, beneficial, and truthful. You must have those elements. So we have to learn how to give, because all of us are senior to someone. We have to learn how to give constructive feedback or criticism. That's not a bad thing. I like getting constructive feedback and criticism. I like it. Because I always feel I have to improve. So I also like it when it's done truthfully, pleasing, and beneficial. Is that okay? You want to add anything? Okay. You had a question?
Yeah. Every morning you said, thank you for a very nice class.
Harry, now we'll see you next time, huh?
Yeah, pick up Harry and Rich.
Okay. I miss you.
Thank you very much for the nice class. Every morning you said the 10 offenses to the holy name, and the 10th offense is that we should not maintain material attachment even though we understand so many instructions. But still, like, just hearing instructions and getting some more knowledge, there's, like, in the mind, like, some attachment remains. How to overcome that, and how serious is that offense?
To maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on the matter, that takes a long time. It takes a long time. Because we say that every morning, and still, the whole day, we've got material attachments. So we maintain material. That's because of avijja, or ignorance. That takes a long time to overcome. It's not an offense to maintain a material attachment if you do it under Krishna's guidance. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. That's dharma. So that's a material attachment. Sex life's a material attachment. But Krishna says, okay, you can have chatura vayam, maya shristam. He says there are four ashrams, four varnas. I give you four ashrams. You don't have to be brahmachari or sannyasi. Right? You can have grihastha life also. That's it's a material attachment. Getting married is not a spiritual. You don't do it because you're spiritually enlightened. We don't. We do it because we're materially attached. But Krishna says, okay, do that. So, maintaining material attachments, if you're maintaining the attachments in Krishna in a regulated way, under Krishna and Guru's guidance, gradually you'll overcome those attachments. And then it's not an offense. But if you maintain, you know, ridiculous attachments, which are just going to obstruct your bhakti, even after being instructed, then okay, that can become offensive. It takes time. The main thing is that year after year of being a devotee, you should feel your material desires going down, not up. Is that okay?
Yeah, like, just one more question. Oh, can I come back later?
Yeah.
Those devotees who choose the amount of rounds they kind of chant and regular principles, how does it work really? Are they still getting removed? Because I think Prabhupada was really, really clear on the instructions. So,
what's the question?
How does it work? Are they, at the end of their life, they're still.
If what? If they don't?
If they choose, the amount of rounds they want to chant and the amount of, you know, regular principles they want to follow. Because I remember when Prashad called so much talking about that, and he said literally that's bogus.
So if someone only follows three principles, chant eight rounds, will they go back to Godhead? That's the question. Right. No, they won't. Because if they're only following three principles, it still means they're attached to the material energy. Right? So if you're like that at the time of death, you don't go. Even in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, the pastime of Ajamya, at the time of death, he didn't go to Vaikuntha. He went to Hardwar, because he was dealing with a prostitute and all these things, still having kids. He had to go to Hardwar, take one more birth, purify himself, and then he went back to the spiritual world. It's not automatic. Even if you're chanting 16 rounds and following the four regular principles, Prabhupada says in the teachings of Queen Kunti, chapter 8 of the first canto, Prabhupada said there is a quality to the chanting. Right? You can chant 16 rounds. That is enough to take you back to Godhead. But what is the quality of the chanting? Are tears falling from my eyes like torrents of rain while I'm chanting? Right? So you're chanting Hare Krishna, but what's happening in your consciousness? Right? So you're chanting 16 rounds, but if you're not chanting with the right level of purity or attachment to Krishna, you won't go back to the spiritual world. You're chanting 16 rounds, but maintaining material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on the matter, you don't go back to the spiritual world. It's not, nothing is automatic. That's the point. Right? Or another devotee might only be chanting 8 rounds a day and following 3 regular principles, but at the end of his life, in the last 5 minutes, he has acute realization and releases all those material desires, then he can go back to the spiritual world. Katwanga Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, right? It's mentioned. In one moment, he became Krishna conscious. He realized, said, how long do I have to live? One moment. So then he let go of everything and just went back to Krishna. So it only takes one moment to become fully Krishna conscious. But it's how we do our devotional service. Not about the amount of rounds you chant, 64, 32, 16. Yeah, it's the love which is in the consciousness. Right? What's the goal of life? Always remember Krishna, never forget him. If you're like that, you go back to Krishna. If you're not like that, then you take birth. You chant 64 rounds a day, but still attached to the material world. You take birth again. Nothing is automatic. That's the point. Is that okay? Okay.
Just one comment about the healing of Shishupal with the suggestion that not a drop of blood came down.
No. Don't spill blood in the sacrificial arena.
The last is the mind of the Krishna model.
Yeah.
Spoiling.
Blood is inauspicious in the temple. So. Another point?
All good.
Tear apart.
Just on that point, so it is in then 10 blessings, 16 minutes or something. But I think, like Maharaj, that's kind of like a concession where like, they're expected to eventually come to 16 minutes. It's not like forever on everyone's bed.
Yeah, we're expecting them to, yeah. Yeah, what we're saying is that if we say to everyone across the board in the beginning, this is the only standard, right? It's too much for people. So you have to say, okay, you can do this, 1 round a day, 2 rounds a day, 4 rounds a day, 8 rounds a day, 3 regular principles, 16 rounds, 4 regular principles, take shelter of a guru, take shelter of a prophet, like that. The problem is it has to be progressive and gradual. Otherwise, people feel excluded. That's the point. So, any other?
You were mentioning about offending devotees. Do you really have to differentiate a human being as a devotee or not? Is that necessary?
Do we have to differentiate? Everyone's a devotee. There's four types of offences, right? Nama aparad, seva aparad, Vaishnava aparad, jana aparad. Jana aparad means every living entity. If you kill a mosquito, like that, that's jana aparad. You just killed a living entity, right? Or if you kill a fly unnecessarily, or you cut down a tree unnecessarily, that's jana aparad. That's an offence. Against the holy name, actually. Right? So you have to... We see everyone as being a devotee. Even the fly, even the mosquito, like that. So you don't want to offend anyone. They're all part of Krishna. But if you're someone who's practicing Krishna consciousness, that's a more serious offense. So you have to be especially careful. Is that okay? Any other question? Srila Prabhupada ki.